find his work for USA Today. Go online to usatoday.com, or you can sneak into a hotel lobby and grab one at the front desk. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. A very happy Wednesday to you, sir. How's it going, George?
It's good. We frown upon the sneaking into the hotel lobby to steal one thing.
I am speaking for myself, not USA Today or the Schroeder family.
Okay. Just wanted to get that disclaimer up there.
Okay. So I heard you were on Feinbaum yesterday. The guest host was Ryan McGee of ESPN The Magazine. And the subject was the unpleasantries at Baylor, and I guess you could say they're now embattled coach Art Briles, reports of inaction, I guess the best way to say it. Ryan said it probably gets worse before it improves. You made a good point, though. How important is it we avoid just lumping everything together and understand that each case is unique?
Well, the first thing is, look, when you have this many sets of allegations, and they're not all sexual assault, but several of them are, and they're not all physical assault, but several of them are, and some of them are going to be factually true, and some of them may be less than that. When you put them all together, it is a bad deal. Look, I mean, first of all, let me back up. Any single sexual assault or physical assault allegation is a bad deal. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying when you put them all together, it's a really bad deal for the school. And you know what? It ought to be a bad deal for the school because right. It's pretty clear that they did not respond in the way they should to the first couple, or at least that's what it appears, the first couple. And then from there, you end up with sort of a rash of these, not necessarily because you didn't respond to the first couple, but that's what it looks like. And so that's a problem. And obviously yesterday, one of the bloggers who covers Texas, who's has a name for breaking news occasionally, sometimes doesn't get it right, but sometimes does. Chip Brown reported that Baylor had fired Ken Starr. That appears to not be the case as of yet. Now, no one's going to be real surprised if they do fire Ken Starr. Of course, he's the president and chancellor of Baylor. And yes, that Ken Starr, who was the independent prosecutor during the Clinton scandal,
yes,
years
is.
Of the 90s.
Right.
But no one is going to be real surprised if Ken Starr eventually gets the axe. The question at this point is less what happens with athletic director Ian McCaw and more, does anything happen to Art Briles and what is it? And it wasn't yesterday, it was 2 days ago. Ryan McGee, who was filling in for Feinbaum, asked me what I thought would happen. And I said, look, I really think it's 50-50. I mean, flip a coin. And I had some people on Twitter get after me for that. I flip a coin as to whether, or 50-50 as to whether Art Briles makes it or not. And they're like, yeah, you're just saying it could happen or not. And that's exactly right. But how often do you say, yeah, I think there's a 50% chance this coach gets fired? Not very often in a situation where the guy is as successful and as important to the football program and to the school as Art Briles is. So I actually thought it was actually saying something to say that. I wasn't saying there was a 20% chance he could get fired. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I do think this. I do think there's, unless the independent report is, released and it fully exonerates Art Briles, and as it turns out, he just had a run of bad apples, and he had actually tried to do the right thing, and we find all this out, which I'm not sure anybody's thinking is what we're going to find out. Unless that happens, I think there's going to be some mounting pressure to get rid of him. Now, will they do it? I don't know.
But, it's crazy, and there's no way around it, because from a football point of view, what he did there literally is a magic act. I mean, they didn't make a bowl game from 95 through 2009. Now, in the last few years, they've almost played for the title. So what the heat you're getting on Twitter or social media, I would imagine, is from fans who are mostly focused on that.
Probably, which is too bad, but that's the way things are. You want to believe that your program did the right thing. And that's always, I understand that. I get that. But I think I also took some heat because they were saying, no, you didn't say anything. You said it was 50-50. It could be this, could be the other. I guess, but that's not what I didn't mean it that way. I meant it like that's a pretty significant chance that a guy like Art Briles, who's done what he's done at the school, could get fired. And I'm not, look, that's okay. I mean, people take shots, and maybe I didn't word it very well. That's okay. Not a big deal.
Yeah, but George.
It's a bad thing. Bad things have happened at Baylor, and Baylor is in a bad situation because of it, and frankly should be.
No, I agree. And if you know, from a football point of view, there's no chance he gets fired. So you're saying this is significant enough to where he might lose his job 50-50. George, I'm going to back you here. I think you said something.
Well, let me just say this. Well, thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. Now that the check is in the mail.
Thank you.
As usual. But what I hate about this is that football even enters into the consideration.
Of course.
I understand. Now, listen, I mean, either you decide he hasn't done things and shouldn't be fired, he's done the right things or not enough bad things and he shouldn't be fired, or you decide he has, you know, recruited bad guys or not had the right discipline or whatever and he should be fired. Football shouldn't matter in this context. Now, it does, and it always does, and in this context, you're right, you mentioned how bad they were. They went year after year after year, I don't know how many, without winning a single Big 12 game for a while. That's how bad they were. And now, you know, they've got a $300 million stadium that Art Briles is the reason they built.
Sure.
You know, they've got a program that is, you know, on the cusp of elite, not quite elite, but almost. But for some injuries, might have been the best team in the country last year before their quarterback started dropping like flies. And so that is clearly going to enter into it. Let me just say one more thing. At a school like Baylor, which, you know, above all places sort of its faith-based Christian mission is supposedly the forefront of the school and the reason for its existence, that ought to be the last place where football is more important and becomes the more important consideration.
Excellent point. Another subject that caught my ear was Tennessee. I mean, we're 100 days away from the season starting. And, of course, they're progressing under Butch Jones. My bet would be most don't realize they won 9 games last year. I think the question that you were asked, are they overhyped for this year? But I think they're actually intriguing in a less than dominating Eastern Division. So what's your take on the Vols?
Well, first of all, they have been overhyped for the last few years, which is why people are sort of hesitant, and I'm among them, to sort of hype them this year. I want to wait and see. That said, they won 6 out of their last 7 games. The games they lost were by a very very small amount of points. They were all tight. They led Oklahoma into the fourth quarter in Knoxville. That game helped make Oklahoma's resume and, you know, probably turned them. Look, you say this, and a couple weeks later, Oklahoma lost to Texas, but probably really did went a long way towards Oklahoma thinking he'd be as good as the Sooners became. And probably went a long way towards Tennessee not winning a couple other games, frankly. So they were close to turning the corner last year. But if the standard is hyping them means we think they're going to be all the way back and kind of a SEC East contender, which makes you a national title contender, I'm not ready to go there. I'm not ready to do that. I mean, I think they bring back a lot of players. Joshua Dobbs would be one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC. But he'd be one of the top 2 or 3 quarterbacks in the SEC. But it's not exactly a quarterback-rich league most years or this year. And when I look at the East itself, it's still behind the West, no question, not even close. But I got to look at Georgia. I think Georgia, if they can solve their quarterback issues, I'm interested in them. I think Florida, if it does better with the Del Rio kid transferred from Oregon State, if he ends up being the quarterback, I think they've got a shot to be pretty good too. And so I think you've got to look at those two schools too. And meanwhile, I'm not sure I'm ready to say that any of those three schools, including Tennessee, is ready to stand up to whoever the SEC West spits out as a champion.
We're talking with George Schroeder, USA Today. You visited and wrote about Houston, who won a major bowl, beat Florida State, year one under Tom Herman, who came over after being the offensive coordinator at Ohio State, 13-1. And obviously they face the difficulty. They're not in a major. They're in the AAC. George did not mince words. He thinks his team or the champion of that league will be in the mix for the playoff, especially his team, if they win those two tough non-conference games.
His team, hypothetically, because of the two non-conference games, they opened with Oklahoma, and it's a quasi-home game. It's a neutral site, Energy Stadium in Houston. There'll be a lot of Oklahoma fans there, but it'll certainly be a Houston-dominated crowd. And then they play the American schedule, which is, you know, the best at least it was last year. I think people expect it to be this year, the best of the group of five leagues, toughest schedule. Last year, at one time, there were four teams ranked in the top 25.
Yep.
And then they play Louisville on a Thursday night in November. That's at home. And if you were to go unbeaten against that, which meant you won the American, and you go unbeaten, and you beat Oklahoma in that case, especially if Oklahoma then went on and won the Big 12, and that was maybe their only loss, and so you normally would be talking about Oklahoma as a playoff contender, how do you not have Houston, in that case, ranked ahead of Oklahoma if you are a selection committee member? That was his point. I mean, I think all of those ifs are unlikely to happen. Starting with I'm not sure they're going to beat Oklahoma to start the season.
Right.
I think they probably won't. But if they were to do all those things, and then if Oklahoma was to cooperate and rebound from that and, say, win out, I think all of a sudden you've got a real big argument, depending on what happens in some of the other leagues, as to why Houston doesn't deserve to be in the four. That was his point, and I would agree with him if he could get to that.
Right, yeah, we got to get there first. Pac-12 this week said they're going to work with their network partners to be more flexible, maybe allow for some overlap with games on their network. It's not huge. They said it can impact up to four games. And I'm not a person who believes late games really hurt the league. I mean, Mariota won the Heisman in a landslide. Oregon made the playoff. How much, if any, do you think folks in other time zones having to stay up late for games really impacts the perception of this conference?
Well, I think it impacts the potential individual races for things like the Heisman, but that is not a reason to change things because those things only come along every so often. And what's more important is the playoff. And you know what impacted the playoff was Stanford losing that first game of the year at Northwestern and thus having two losses.
Right.
If they'd had one loss, we'd have had a real serious argument about them versus, Michigan State versus Oklahoma, and which of those three teams, which two of those three teams deserve the last two spots. But when you lose and you have two losses, then sorry, I mean, you're sort of out of it in the way this is. I mean, that's just how it is. That had a ton more to do with the playoff than starting late did. Now, I do think this. I do think it impacted Christian McCaffrey. When Mariota won the Heisman, it had been building for a couple of years. McCaffrey came out of nowhere last year, and the difference between him coming out of nowhere and Johnny Manziel coming out of nowhere, aside from the parties and all that, is that Johnny Manziel was on TV in marquee games in windows and people could see him. And meanwhile, Stanford was, first of all, playing a lot of those night games that were really late for the East Coast guys, but also they weren't in the playoff picture as much, and they weren't playing teams in the playoff picture as much.
Sure.
And so I do think it impacts the individual races. I'm not sure that there's a good answer, frankly. Do you want to play games that, the earlier you play games, the tougher it is on the people who are actually in the seat sometimes. So, I guess you could say we're going to play all our games at 4 o'clock Pacific. I guess that would work if you wanted to. But if you're going to be on TV, you want to sort of balance the needs of the fans with everything else. There's not a perfect solution. Time zones are what they are.
Yeah, being from the East, I definitely understand that. But I want to finish with the NBA West Conference Finals. When we spoke last week, it was one game to none, and then it would be even after OKC got crushed. Now they've won by 28 and 24. When you consider what the Thunder did to the Spurs, now up 3-1 here. Is it time to say this is no longer shocking, but just a really talented, well-coached team just outplaying the supposed favorite?
Yeah, I mean, I actually think if you've watched these games, you realize except for about a quarter and a half, Oklahoma City's clearly been the better team. And that includes, the game where they got crushed. That was a quarter and a half, two quarters of work. Look, nothing says that the Golden State Warriors won't come back and win three in a row, other than history and things like that. But we know how good the Warriors are. But I think what we found out is that the Thunder have morphed and evolved in the playoffs into something that is completely other than a 55-win team. They look like the 73-win team, frankly. And I think what we've seen is suddenly they're reaching pretty close to sort of what people thought they might become as their two superstars were growing up. And it's really been quite interesting to watch because they clearly look like the better team. They look like the team that intimidating the Warriors, and I don't mean intimidating them in a, you know, playing thuggish kind of way. I just mean it looks like the Warriors understand that they're the better team. You know, I'm as stunned as anybody by that. I thought it was pretty clear that Oklahoma City had gotten a lot better, and I thought, well, you know, they may give these guys a run, and who knows if they can, maybe they could beat them in a seven-game series, although with the, you know, the home court advantage going to Golden State, it's going to be hard. I don't think anybody expected them to be up 3-1, much less to have dominated them in these last two games the way they did.
So, real quick, I just want to check the Schroeder bucket list. 4 years ago, did you get to go to the finals, or if they win here, would this be your first taste of an NBA final?
It'd be my first taste. 4 years ago, I was still working for the Register Guard.
Oh, okay.
I know I didn't. You know that I love the RT, but they never offered me the opportunity to go see the finals.
Yeah, to go see Miami, Oklahoma City, yeah, from Eugene.
And you know something I don't know? And Austin Meek is actually on his way to go cover the finals. I'm going to be really upset with Mark Johnson. Okay. No, but I did not get to see the finals. I covered a playoff game 3 years ago, and I'm usually so busy this time of year, despite the fact that it's the offseason for college football, that I don't really get to help out. Now, if they get to Game 6, and I kind of suspect they will, I think Golden State has one last stand in them and wins tomorrow night in Oakland. If they get to Game 6 in Oklahoma City, I'm scheduled to help cover that on it with our actual NBA guys. So we'll see where it goes from there.
Awesome. All right. Hey, good stuff. Again, usatoday.com. I'm on Twitter, at George Schroeder. Lot covered. Well done, George. Always my pleasure. You have a great week.
You too, Steve. Take care.
Take it easy.